You are listening to the Hill City Church Podcast. Our mission is to become and make disciples who walk with God, connect with people, and impact the world.
Well, good morning to all of you. Yeah, that's your part. Whew. Yeah, let's try that again. Good morning, everybody. Morning. My name is Nick. I am the operations pastor here at Hill City, and it's such an honor to be able to come and share it with you today. We do have a Connect card there in the seat back in front of you, and if you want, I sounded like a flight attendant there for a minute. That was kind of weird, but if you want to fill this out, if there's anything you want to let us know about, like next steps, prayer requests, anything like that. We get a lot of prayer requests. We get a lot of Connect cards, both physical and through our website. Those get prayed over. We respond to those. We love to hear from you in that way. If you're not able to catch somebody on a Sunday and you want to let us know something, this is a good way to do it. And then I just want to reiterate, I just want to say thank you to Pastor James for sharing and being with us today. And reiterate, if you are feeling prompted to sponsor a child today, you can go over and visit the table. There's QR codes all over the place, kind of wherever you go in the building today, that you can scan, and you can also sponsor a child that way. So if you're feeling led in that way, I just encourage you to do that. And we've been on a journey looking at the seven signs of Jesus in the Gospel of John. And the Gospel of John was written by, it's the fourth book in the New Testament, written by a man named John, who was one of the disciples of Jesus. But John knew that Jesus was much, much more than just a man. Even though he was probably Jesus' closest friend while he was here on earth, he knew Jesus was more than just a man. He's the Son of God. He was God in human flesh. And so when John sat down to write an account of Jesus' life, he didn't just want to communicate facts about here's what Jesus did, here's what Jesus taught. He wanted his readers, that includes us, to believe that Jesus is the Messiah and the Son of God. And so he carefully chose seven signs of Jesus to focus on. And these seven signs were chosen because they had the best chance, maybe, that they could best reveal the true glory of Jesus. And so today we're in John chapter 9, if you want to begin turning there. And John calls these miracles of Jesus signs, which is very significant that he uses that word sign instead of the word miracle. Because what do signs do? They direct, right? They point us to something. And so the sign isn't the point, right? That when you see a sign, that's not the point. It's what the sign points to that really matters. So the signs of the book of John, they point to something else. They point to the fact that Jesus is the Son of God. So to start out today, I thought I would share with you my favorite road sign of all time. I grew up here in Boise, and I took lots of trips to the Oregon coast when I was younger and as an adult, so I've driven by this sign many times. It's near Baker City. Isn't that great? Isn't that a great sign? I feel so informed, right? Like, I know exactly where I'm going now, right? I mean, come on. That's not a helpful sign, is it, right? I'm not Jason Bourne. I don't have a photographic memory. I can't just, like... And I mean, I'm driving the Oregon speed limit, which is like 45 miles an hour or something like that when I go by. I don't have time to figure out what that sign means, but that's my favorite sign. Every time I drive by, I chuckle. But as we're going to see, if you are really going to notice what the sign is pointing to, it really depends on where your heart is at. That's what we're going to see today. John chapter 9, Jesus performs this sign in Jerusalem. There's lots of different feasts that the Jewish people observe that are meant to point them again to the glory of God, and they have deep religious significance, and Jesus is in Jerusalem with his disciples for one of these festivals, one of these feasts called the Feast of Tabernacles, and he's a very controversial figure by this point. Everyone is all wound up about Jesus. He's already caused a few scenes at this festival in particular. The religious leaders hate his guts. They want him dead. Things are just crazy. There's a lot of heat. But Jesus is about to take things to another level with this miracle. And this story has more than its fair share of crazy moments. We're going to look at the whole story, the whole chapter. So let's jump right in. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. It says, "As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Okay, so in those days, if you had a disability, you didn't have a lot of options. There weren't ADA requirements for buildings. There weren't government programs. There wasn't Social Security disability insurance, things like that. So if you could count on your friends and family to help you out, then you'd be okay. If you couldn't count on that, you didn't have a lot of options. A lot of times you would end up begging for money at the city gates or at the temple gates. And we're going to find out in a few verses that this man has had no choice but to begin begging for help. That's where he's at. And so his disciples aren't just asking a curious offhand question here. They're in the face of great human suffering right now. And so anytime we're confronted with great suffering, we always start to ask the deeper questions, don't we? Like, why is this happening? Why is God allowing this to happen? Why does he allow them to be born with disabilities? There has to be a reason. So they turn their question on their rabbi, their teacher. But do you see the assumption in their question as they ask this question? As Jews, it's unthinkable that Jesus would have screwed up in creating this guy. So someone else has to be responsible for this suffering. So who is it? Is it this man himself? But what kind of sense does that make? How can a man be born blind because of his own sin? That's ridiculous, right? But unless God knew ahead of time, maybe he's going to be a bad person, so he struck him with blindness. Or maybe his parents sinned, and this is their punishment, to have a son born blind. But these are kind of their best shots at answering the question, right? Which is the question of human suffering. Usually we hear the question phrase like, why do bad things happen to good people? You know what? If God is all powerful, if he's loving, if he's all knowing, why does this stuff happen? I mean, he knows about it. He cares about it. He has the power to do something about it. So why? Well, I look at how Jesus answers their question. Look at verse 3. Jesus says, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So whose fault is it, Jesus, that people are born with disabilities? Why do bad things happen to good people? Is God really good? Does God punish us for our sins by causing birth defects in our children because we messed up? Jesus says, neither. We live in a world that's messed up because of sin, and suffering is a reality. Now, sometimes there is suffering in our lives because of our own sin or because of the sins of others. I mean, human sin leads to human suffering. But what Jesus is pushing back on here is the false choice, right? That there had to have been sin, right? Whose was it? This man or his parents? But sometimes there's just suffering. And there doesn't seem to be a good reason for the suffering. And Jesus says, if you want to know why these things happen, I'll give you an answer. God takes every single circumstance and works through it so his glory might be displayed. That's the answer he gives. Now, this isn't about who's responsible for the circumstances. It's about the all-powerful, loving God who's working through every circumstance, even the really bad ones. And we ask, why is there suffering? And for many of us here today, this isn't a philosophical question. Okay, we're not just asking, let's have a theoretical discussion about this. If you really want to know, you're here today, you really want to know, why would God allow this suffering in my life? What did I do to deserve this? Does God have it out for me? And I'm here to tell you, no. God isn't out to get us. He's working in spite of the suffering. It's not always clear why he doesn't take the suffering away, but here's one thing that is clear. God's glory is displayed most clearly when he works through our suffering and our bad circumstances. I could tell you countless stories from my own life, the lives of dozens of people I know to illustrate this. There's things that happen to us that we wouldn't wish on anyone, right? But when it comes down to it, there's a sense in which we wouldn't trade those things, those circumstances, because that's when we really saw the glory of God displayed. It's this weird paradox. And speaking of glory displayed, did you notice what Jesus calls himself? He calls himself the light of the world in verse 5. Now, what does light do? It illuminates, right? It makes things visible. Look at verse 6. Having said these things, Jesus spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Okay, so Jesus spits on the ground. This is one of those times, guys, when I wish the Bible had a little bit more information for us, right? Look, I'm a guy, so I read this story. I have four sons, right? You can pray for my wife, but I used to be in the life stage. I think we have a picture. Do we have a picture? Yeah. I used to be in the life stage where I had, and I see some people walking around here at Hill City where they've got the little kids and one's, you know, attached to them and they're trying to kind of herd cats, right? Well, I'm in a different life stage now. I'm in the life stage of giants. I walk among giants, right? And anyway, but they are still boys, and you and there's five. It's five on one, so you can just go ahead and pray for my wife. And I'm just going to apologize in advance for this line of thinking. But how much spit does it take to make mud, people? I mean, seriously, like if you've got this like dainty image of Jesus being all like, you know, that doesn't make mud, right? So you got to put yourself in this guy's shoes. Like, he can't see, and all he hears is Jesus being like, you know what I mean? And then he's got something wet on his eyes, and he's like, "Oh, what is going on?" And Jesus, and then you know, what in the world? Like, did Jesus just get bored of healing people verbally, you know? And he just wanted to shake things up, and he tells this guy to go wash. Like, he has to tell the guy. The guy's like, "Yeah, I'm already going, man," you know. And what did you do to me? But Jesus sends him to a specific pool, the pool of Siloam, which means sent, and. The man's sight is restored. Like, Jesus opens this man's eyes. And what was that like for this guy to all of a sudden be able to see? The story, story keeps going in verse 8. And I love this. It says, the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" And some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he is like him." And he kept saying, I'm the man." And so they said to him, "How then were your eyes open?" And he answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So he went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I don't know." So people don't believe this guy who he says he is. I mean, he's got, "Guys, it's really me, right?" And they're like, "No, it's not him. It's just a random guy who looks like him, you know, just exactly like him." And somehow he's able to convince them that he is who he says he is, and then they, of course, want to know how he suddenly can see. And does he ever have a story to tell, right? He tells them, "I mean, this guy Jesus made mud, I have some suspicions on how he did that, but none of that matters now because he put it on my eyes and he told me to wash, and I did, and now I can see." And so they're like, "Well, where is this Jesus guy?" And he's like, "I don't know." All right, so pay attention to that word "know" as we continue through this story, because it becomes a very important word. We see everyone involved claims what they know and what they do not know in this story. Look at verse 13. This is a longer section. We're just going to read through it together here. They brought the man to the Pharisees who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "Again, he put mud on my eyes, I wash, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was division among them. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him, since he has opened your eyes?" The man said, "He is a prophet." The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son, that he was born blind, but how he sees, we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age. Ask him." So the Pharisees ask the man how he's obtained his sight, and the man tells his story again. And work is forbidden on the Sabbath. I suppose making mud, regardless of how you make it, is forbidden. It's considered work. So working on the Sabbath is considered a sin. So the Pharisees are saying there's no way that somebody who is a sinner like this could ever actually, heal somebody. So they turn back to the blind man and they say, tell us more about this guy. You're the one that had the encounter with him. And now the seeing man responds, he is a prophet. Now, this is a totally inadequate title to describe Jesus, but it is a positive title, right? And the Pharisees are still struggling to believe that this man had been blind and had received his sight, so they call the man's parents because they would be able to testify whether or not this man was truly born blind. And right when they come in, they start drilling the man's parents with questions. Is this your son? How is he able to see? Is he the one that was born blind? What's going on here? And the parents respond, we know he's our son. We know he was born blind. But how he can see now, we don't know. We don't know who opened his eyes. Why don't you ask him? He's old enough to speak for himself. So these man's parents are afraid of the Jewish leaders. Do they truly know the answer to the question from the Pharisees? Sure they do. Are they willing to answer it? No, they're not. So I don't know is the safest answer that they can come up with. Now, the Pharisees shift their attention back to the man. Okay, I can just picture him right now, like, hey, thanks, Mom and Dad. Thanks for the support. Really appreciate it, right? And look, if you look at verse 24, they come back after the blind man again, or the healed man again. So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know this man is a sinner. He answered, whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. The Pharisees come on even stronger. They're like, give glory to God, tell the truth, right? We know this man's a sinner. We know it. The once blind man responds with this profound statement. He goes, hey, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, though I was blind, now I see. There's not a whole lot to know, right? All I know is that I was blind, I had an encounter with this man, and now I can see. For the first time in my life, I'm no longer in darkness. I can see. Do you understand the magnitude of that, Pharisees? I can see. Well, this doesn't go over well with the Pharisees who have already made up their mind about Jesus. If you look at verse 26, they said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he answered them, I have told you already, but you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? And they reviled him, saying, you are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not even know where he comes from. Now, at this point, we've entered all-out war, right? It's this amazing boldness from this formerly blind man who's standing up to the Pharisees. It's his story that gives him the boldness. Look at verse 30. The man answered, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. They answered him, you were born in utter sin, and you would teach us. And they cast him out. So everyone in this time period thought that God heard the righteous but rejected the prayers of the unrighteous, the ungodly. And so this is the major premise of the healed man's argument, right? The minor premise of the argument is, hey, look at the miracle, right? Look what's been done. Like, the only conclusion he can come to is this Jesus is a righteous man. The bottom line of the healed man's argument, if this man was not from God, he could do nothing. He's the one who's got the solid argument. The Pharisees are so totally and completely flustered at this point that they just throw their hands up and they say, you were born in utter sin and you would try to teach us? And how dare you lecture us? And they kick him out of the synagogue. He's no longer allowed to participate in the Jewish synagogue. And so this back and forth that's recorded here in John is really amazing. Now, this man holds his ground against the Pharisees. Now the Pharisees, they claim to know a whole lot, right? They claim to be disciples of Moses himself, meaning they know the Old Testament law of Moses better than anyone else. They are disciples of Moses. But as we read about this sign, we discover that these Pharisees who claim to know the law, they turn out to know nothing, actually. Whereas the healed man, who knows only Jesus, has had an experience with God that cannot be denied. So this man finds himself insulted by the religious leaders, essentially rejected by his parents, ejected from the synagogue. He's kind of standing there out on the street thinking, okay, now what? Like, I can see, and that's so amazing, but what now? Is this where it ends? Is there something else? Well, let me tell you, the best is yet to come in this story. Look at verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." He said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said, "Oh, are we also blind?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains." So now there's a new word that stands out in this passage. It's the word believe. At this point in the story, we've seen the word know has been such an important word, but it's replaced now by the word believe. Jesus finds this healed man. He asks him a very direct question. "Hey, do you believe in the Son of Man, the promised Messiah, the Savior who is to come?" And I love the guy's answer. "You just tell me who he is, and I'm all in. Just show me. I'm ready to believe." And I love how Jesus breaks the good news to this man. He says, "You have now seen him, because you're talking to him right now." And let me ask you something. Do you think Jesus is talking about physical sight when he says, "You have now seen him"? No. He's talking about something much deeper than that. I mean, Jesus looks like an ordinary man, right? There's nothing special externally about Jesus. Now this man could see Jesus for who he really was. And right at the end of John chapter 8, the chapter before this one, Jesus makes the most direct claim to be God of his whole ministry. If you can go back and look at it, the end of John chapter 8, Jesus never said the exact phrase, "Hey, I'm God," but he didn't really need to, because people picked up on his cues just fine. And then they picked up stones to stone him for blasphemy, because right before he encounters this blind man, right before this story, Jesus has escaped an angry mob that's trying to kill him, execute him for blasphemy. This story is meant to be a counterpoint to that story. You've got a crowd of people, a group of religious leaders who can't get past the fact that there's nothing outwardly impressive about this man, Jesus. In fact, Jesus even knows that this misunderstanding of who he really is actually going to eventually lead to his arrest and his death. That's why back in verses 3 and 4, he says those kind of weird cryptic things about night and day. Okay, he's predicting his death in those verses. And here's the irony. A man who was born blind is the one who sees Jesus for who he really is. And to see Jesus as he really is to believe in Jesus for who he really is. Or maybe it's the other way around. We have that famous phrase, seeing is believing. Well, this blind man hasn't even seen Jesus with his own eyes when he shares his testimony with the Pharisees, when he calls himself a disciple of Jesus. Instead of seeing is believing, in this case, maybe it'd be more accurate to say believing is seeing. Up until now, it's been all about what people know, what they don't know, or at least what they think they know, what they think they don't know. But what really comes down to is, what do you believe? I'm going to make a few statements about belief that don't really need a lot of explanation, but they do deserve reflection. I'm just going to encourage you, maybe write these down or kind of take note of them and reflect on these. First, what you believe is the most defining thing about you as a person. Also, you don't have to know all the answers to believe in Jesus. That's another thing I want you to reflect on. Third, every testimony, every story of a life changed by Jesus has a turning point. That turning point is belief. Let me say it like this. Belief is the turning point in every story of a life changed by Jesus. This man believes in Jesus, and now how he responds blows me away as he responds to Jesus. Right there in the middle of the street, in the middle of the city of Jerusalem, there's people everywhere because of the festival. It's crowded. It's noisy. He kneels down on it, gets on his face, and worships because he believes. He knows who this really is. This is his creator. This is the one who made him and the one who remade him. This isn't just a man. This is God in the flesh. And Jesus' prediction that God's glory would be displayed in this man's life, in this man's suffering, is fulfilled right in this moment in the passage. And let me tell you something. Today, that moment is here again. But this time, it's for you. I don't know what you're going through. I don't know what circumstances you find yourself in today. But Jesus makes it clear in verse 39 that his purpose in coming is to put a choice before every single person on this planet. Jesus says, "For a judgment he has come." This is no joke. It's no joke. You have to decide for yourself what you believe about Jesus. You can't stay neutral. This story was never about physical blindness at all. That's just an incidental detail, really. The real question is, will you see Jesus for who he really is? Will you allow God to display his glory in the midst of your struggle, in the midst of your difficult circumstances? Today could be the turning point in your story. And the Pharisees are standing right there, and they go, "What are you saying, Jesus? Are you saying that we're also blind? Are you saying we're blind too?" And Jesus says, "It's not that simple. Now you've heard the truth, there's no going back. Once you've heard the truth about Jesus, you must respond to that knowledge." The problem is that the Pharisees have deceived themselves. Right? They think they've got it all figured out, that they're the judges of what's true and what isn't, but really they're under judgment themselves. Maybe when it comes to Jesus, it's better to be ignorant than to be self-righteous. If you've never heard the truth about Jesus before, you've heard it today. And now it's your turn. What are you going to do with the knowledge that you have? Just like the blind man, in Jesus, we find it all. No situation is too broken for God. No person is too far gone. You might be sitting there thinking, "You don't know what I've done. You don't know what I've been through." Listen, I don't. I would love to hear more about your story. But let me say this. Jesus came and died on a cross and rose again so that we could be set free, so that we wouldn't be trapped in our broken situations any longer, sin no longer has any control over us. He made a way for us to be near him again. So you can either believe that Jesus is who he says he is and worship him for who he is, or you can decide to turn your back, trusting your eyes only, ignoring what God's doing in your life. But the choice is ultimately yours, and no one can make that choice for you. I just want to encourage you, if there's a decision that you need to make today, please come talk to me. Pull one of our other leaders aside. Grab a Connect card. Go on our website. Just take a step today and say, I want to find out more. You can go to our website. You can watch videos about what it means to get baptized. There's ways you can reach out and you can take a step today if God is prompting you to do that. And I just want to speak to those in the room who have been believers for a while, whether it's months or years. You've been a believer for a little while. I just want to remind you of the powerful gift that God has given you for reaching out to the world around you. God has given you your story so that his glory might be revealed in your life. In his face-off with the Pharisees, this healed man has one thing and one thing only. He doesn't have all the answers. He doesn't know the law of Moses backwards and forwards. All he has is his testimony. And the coolest part, that's all he needs. All he knows is that this man Jesus showed up and his whole life changed. He's so excited he can hardly stand it. If you're a believer, if you're a follower of Jesus, I'm betting you could tell some stories of how Jesus has showed up in your life. It hasn't been easy, right? There's been ups and downs, but Jesus has been faithful. And if all you carry with you is the knowledge that Jesus is real, that he's capable, that he's always been and he always will be, then you have all you need. Think back to when you were a new Christian for a moment. Believers here in this room, think back. Right? For many of us, we were a new Christian at one point in our lives, but the newness has kind of worn off a little bit. As new Christians, we bring a lot of baggage into our new faith, right? We carry all all of us, right, aspects of our lives into now knowing Jesus. And then we have a lot to learn about what it means to follow Jesus. But have you ever noticed a new Christian's excitement? Their passion, their huge faith, the belief that God is big enough to take care of anything and everything. They have that excitement. Just like this man, new believers might possess nothing in the form of spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the Bible. They don't have a lot to bring to the table in that area. But in Jesus, we have everything. Often over time, some of that excitement, that belief in the power of God, it fades away. We allow ourselves to get caught up in other issues, trying to find all the right answers. We become like the Pharisees in this story, all caught up in what we know. We lose sight of the only thing that matters, how God has saved us, how he has written our story to bring glory to him. And I'm not saying that studying the Bible is not important. Of course it is. I'm not saying that we shouldn't know the answers to tough questions. Those things are absolutely crucial. But as we look at this sign, we're reminded that if our pursuit of all the right answers takes over our pursuit of Jesus, we are in the wrong. The Pharisees had all the right answers according to the law, but when it came to seeing the Messiah as he truly was, they were utterly blind. The healed man, however, he's not concerned with knowing all the answers. He's thrilled at the miraculous work that's been done in his life. So when he encounters Jesus, he worships him. Can I challenge all of us together here in this room today? Some of us have been Christians for years. Some of us have been Christians for months, maybe days. It doesn't matter where you find yourself on your faith journey. I want to tell you, your story matters. God has given you your story so that his glory may be revealed in your life. No matter how much time passes, may we always be reminded that God is displaying his works through our daily experiences if we would only look for it, if we would only see it. Your story matters. The testimony that God is writing in your life, it matters. Your victories, your joys, your triumphs, they matter. Your pain and hurt and regrets, they matter. Some of you are thinking, man, if you only knew what I've gone through, you wouldn't believe that God could do anything in my life. Again, we often think if things aren't going well for us, then we're not in God's favor, but that's not always true. Listen, for those of you who think your story disqualifies you, God can still do big things in your life. For the person in this room going through conflict in relationships, God can use that to display his work in your life if you allow him to. For the person who is crawling their way out of addiction, God can bring you through that. He can use that to display his work in your life for the rest of the world to see it. For the person with chronic pain or illness, God can even work in that. Will you allow him to display his glory through you? God has given you your story so that his glory may be revealed in your life. This is your testimony. Just like we see in the life of this begging blind man, God is not done with you. The question we may ask in times of suffering is, why do bad things happen to good people? But does knowing him beautiful? God has given you your story so that his glory may be revealed in your life. Here's the final question as we close today. Who are you sharing your story with? Who are you sharing your story with? How is God displayed his work and power in your life? What has he brought you through? I encourage you, use the template that we have from the healed man, right? It's so simple, but it's so powerful. One thing I know, before Jesus, fill in the blank. But now, fill in the blank. Just like Jesus sent this man to a pool called Sent, Jesus is sending each one of us out today. Share your story. Share your testimony. Share your excitement about Jesus. There's a world out there that needs to see God's work in your life. God, we come to you humbled today because we recognize that you are working. There's times when we're so caught up in what's going on, and sometimes they are big things, Lord, you know, that we don't have eyes to see the ways that you're working in our lives. God, open our eyes. Help us to see the ways that you're working. And then, God, give us the boldness to share those stories with those around us, that your glory may be displayed in our story, in our life. That is our earnest prayer today. We pray these things in your name. Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to the Hill City Church podcast. You can find out more about our church at hillcityboise.org. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Hill City Boise. We hope this teaching has encouraged you and helps you follow Jesus with everything.